Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite tea-bagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am Mark Gillar. Our guest today is David Kapelian. He is an award-winning journalist, a best-selling author, and is the managing editor of World Net Daily. He's also a widely read online columnist and editor of the critically acclaimed monthly news magazine Whistleblower, which I just subscribed to, by the way. His 2005 book, The Marketing of Evil, is now in its 11th printing, remaining one of the nation's most talked about books on the raging culture war. It was so popular, in fact, that David released a sequel entitled How Evil Works, Understanding and Overcoming the Destructive Forces that are Transforming America. He's here today to help us understand the role that evil has played and is still playing in American society. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, good to be with you.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm a big fan of WorldNet Daily, and as I said, I'm a new subscriber to Whistleblower, but can't wait to dive into that as well.
Great.
Let me just congratulate you on the success of your two books. I've got to tell you, there are a lot of books commenting on the state of our society, but your books are real eye-openers. It's impossible to really look at things the same way again after reading, you know, even just the first book, The Marketing of Evil. And I know they're both wildly successful and deservingly so. David, when you look at the mess that our society is in today from a moral standpoint, I suspect that what we're seeing here are those if-it-feels-good-do-it seeds that were planted in the 60s coming to fruition. Can you take us back to the 60s and talk about all the things that just sort of came together at the right time to create the so-called cultural revolution and how that revolution is still impacting us today?
Yeah, well, you know, Mark, I lived through the 60s. I was in college during the 60s, and to a good extent, I was swept up in all the craziness of the 60s, but I didn't really understand what was going on there. Just on the level that I was on, a lot of people were smoking dope and taking LSD and growing their hair long, and you had the British invasion, so-called, with all the rock groups, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and so forth. And you had, you know, I was on the college campus on, 1966, 67, 68, at the very height of all of the campus unrest, as they say. But it eluded me at the time because I was too much involved with all the trees there to see the forest. What was really going on was a full-scale attack on the moral and political foundation of the U.S. And really, this is something that had been going on for a long time. It just kind of burst out into the open, into the streets, literally and figuratively, during the 60s, where we could see it. But the truth is, and for people that, you know, in the wake of electing an out-socialist like Barack Obama as president of the United States, when we've been fighting socialism, Marxism, communism overseas for decades and fighting and dying to protect strangers from the same philosophy, a lot of people have sort of wondered, how did we get here? How did we get to have a, you know, as Victoria Jackson says from Saturday Night Live, a communist in the White House? How did we get here? Well, a lot of people have learned about this history. They've watched Glenn Beck. They've read World Net Daily. They've read a lot of the books that are out about the so-called progressive movement, which is really, you know, David Horowitz, whose both his parents were card-carrying communists, says, yeah, my parents were communists. They called themselves progressives, and all the communists back then called themselves progressives. It's a euphemism. But this leftist attack on America has been going on way longer than since the 1960s. But as I say, it sort of burst out. It's like termites that are burrowing in the basement of your house, to switch metaphors. It's going on for a long time, and you're not aware of it. I grew up in the 50s where I watched Leave It to Beaver on TV and Father Knows Best. And, you know, divorce was rare, and I barely even knew what homosexuality was and hadn't really heard of abortion. And it was a different world. And yet, all the stuff that I'm talking about, all the, the boring from within by the socialist termites was going on, and it finally came out to we say, what is all this sawdust? I'm extending this metaphor maybe too far, but, you know, what are all these little bugs crawling around here? Our whole foundation is falling down, and that's what we saw in the 1960s. And, of course, today, ever since, you know, Bill Clinton, both Bill and Hillary were basically 60s radicals that made it into, you know, into the elite establishment, into power. And Barack Obama, a lot of the people in his administration and the people behind the scenes, these are all the same type of 60s radicals, the Bill Ayers types and others that hated America, hated capitalism, and wanted to tear it down to replace it with something they thought was better. Well, they're in power now, and that's why we're in such a crisis right now, because we have people that are, you know, Barack Obama runs America. He's president of the United States, but he hates the United States. So this is what happens when you elect somebody who actually hates the country that he's supposed to be running.
Well, you know, it's interesting because during the famous Joe the Plumber exchange, he actually said, I want to spread the wealth around. You can't get any more socialist than that. Yet he was on TV the next day saying, people are saying Barack Obama's a socialist. I'm not a socialist. Yet there's even a clip of him saying that when he was in college, he deliberately sought out the Marxist professors. So, I mean, I think he is an out-of-the-closet socialist, and one of the things he has going for him is I guess a lot of Americans don't know what a socialist is. I was talking to a young girl in her mid-20s and was trying to have a conversation about different forms of government, especially the ones that don't work that well, and I'm not kidding you, David, she actually said, communism, okay, that's the bad one, right? So
right.
When all this stuff has been scrubbed from our textbooks, our history books, you have an electorate that doesn't know the difference between capitalism and socialism and communism. So, I mean, he's got an advantage in that even if he is an out-of-the-closet socialist, most people probably don't even know what that means.
Yeah, that's a good point. The fact is, when I was a kid, we had this idea that communism, Marxism, socialism, spread-the-wealth-aroundism, whatever you want to call it, progressivism, is somehow bad. Because, you know, communism is responsible for, depending on the numbers, anywhere from 100 to 150 million people being murdered in the last century. This you know, wonderful utopian system that's supposed to be all about fairness and justice. So we understood this was an evil ideology, or Ronald Reagan called the Soviet Union the evil empire. Well, you know, after a couple generations of our children going to, you know, public schools and going to these ridiculously leftist colleges, and then when you get too old for school, listening to the ridiculously leftist so-called mainstream news media, the same ones that gave us Barack Obama as president, well, no wonder there's very little understanding of communism or socialism or what's wrong with it, because really, you know, we had the breakup of the evil empire more than 20 years ago, and so communism has not been, you know, the Cold War is over, and so the people now have not grown up with really any kind of a sense of what's wrong with collectivism. And I'm not talking just about harsh communism where you line people up and shoot them, but I'm talking about the European style socialism, which I'm telling you, if you look at the European socialist welfare states, the Scandinavian states, look at them closely, you have tyranny. Any way you describe it, that level of taxation and regulation and stifling of the people, that is tyranny in the with people with American DNA and the kind of freedom we've had, they don't want it. And that's exactly what you've seen in the last 2 years with all the tea parties and before that all the town hall meetings and the eruptions. And basically normal middle class, you know, soccer mom Americans say, what? I want my country back. I don't want socialized medicine. I don't want this huge, you know, taxes and regulation and the government taking over whole sectors of the economy. We don't want it. This is not American. And so we're starting to see a kind of a rebirth of that consciousness of what freedom and free market capitalism and its blessings are. But you're right in saying that the fact that we could have somebody who has been steeped in Marxism. Look, let's not mince words. I got into trouble when I was on Hannity on the panel up against the House liberal Bob Beckel, because I made a statement that Barack Obama has been steeped in Marxist ideology for the past 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I got news for you. That's not my opinion. That's a matter of public record. Like, the Civil War happened, Nazi Germany happened, and this is not something that happened, you know, 3,500 years ago. This is something that we have a record of. Barack Obama, from his teen years, has been absolutely swimming in hardcore Marxism. And so people say, well, it would have been nice to know this, you know, before we elected him. Well, the truth is, we did know it. WorldNet Daily's, one of our top reporters, Jerome Corsi, had the number one New York Times bestseller called The Obama Nation well before the election had all this information in it. But the fact is that the mainstream media, I say that in quotes because it's so far out of the mainstream, they protected Obama. They loved Obama because, frankly, they were enthralled with the idea of a young, black, hip, liberal, well-spoken, at least when he had his teleprompter on, you know, Canada becoming president. That seemed to be so wonderful to them. They flagrantly abandoned their journalistic responsibility to vet the candidate. Because let me tell you something. These people have more resources than WorldNet Daily does, okay? The Washington, the press corps, they have the ability to go and totally show what Barack Obama was made of. There was no lack of knowing on their part. There was a willful ignorance and or a desire to protect him because they hated Bush, they hated conservatism, and, you know, the Obama and the basic liberal agenda of, you know, the social issues, you know, gay rights and abortion, all that. That's what the media, the so-called mainstream media, believes. So they went with him. And they visited on this country, just a terrible, terrible injustice. And to this day, they're just more steeped in denial. They haven't, you know, the day they come out and say, we screwed up, we did something horrible, we thought it was cool to have a black president. And you know what? You and me and probably most people listening think it would be really cool in a country that had slavery and had segregation in my own lifetime, to have a black president. I think that's really cool. And I could probably name 10 people that are black that I'd love to have as president. But not this one. So it's not about black. It's not about racism. That's all garbage. It's just that America is the national light unto the world because of its freedom. We don't need a socialist in the White House, and we've got one.
Well, and let me also add, as someone with Sicilian roots, where's the first Sicilian president? Where's the first Indian president? Where's the first Native American president? Where's the first Hispanic president? You know, there are a lot of firsts yet to be achieved. And I don't think we should throw all prerequisites overboard just in order to get someone of a certain race, but apparently that's what the mainstream media did. I got to tell you, David, one of my favorite cartoons regarding the president is a couple of men in suits are looking toward President Obama, and there's this circle around him of what look like bodyguards, and one man says to the other, wow, he's really got a lot of Secret Service agents around him today. And the other guy says, Secret Service agents? Hey, those are journalists. I mean, they have formed a ring around him, and if you say anything, just even something simple regarding you don't agree with Obamacare or you don't agree with the fact that he plans to push cap and trade next year, you are a racist. I mean, that's the card that's being played on behalf of Barack Obama. I haven't heard him use it, but there are certainly a lot of white liberals playing the race card on his behalf. And I remember reading in your book that you were saying how anybody that disagrees with these people is immediately branded with some horrible name, like you're a Nazi. But it's been the same thing with Barack Obama. Anyone who opposes him is a racist, even if you're just opposing his policies, and might find him quite amiable as a person.
Yeah, you know, Rush Limbaugh describes the media as the state-run media. And I've been a journalist for the better part of 30 years, and it really has changed. Mark, I have to tell you, it used to be that the media, they've always been liberal, as long as I've been alive. They've been liberal, but they were kind of professional still. And there was at least a pretense of objectivity in the 80s. And the 90s, you had a lot of activists. A lot of activist gays got into the media. A lot of pro-choice feminists got into the media because they want to transform America. You get into a transformative profession. And the media is certainly a very transformative profession, so you have that. But now really, I think even the pretense of objectivity is just gone. You have like MSNBC is not pretending to be objective. They're just outward, you know, they mock the Tea Party. They mock normality, which is what the left has always done. The left has always mocked everything normal, like it's ridiculed and mocked, like there's something wrong with it. And that's really what the like MSNBC and the New York Times are doing. I read this sometimes, and am I reading the Daily Coast? No, this is Jonathan Alter, you know, Time, Newsweek, so-called mainstream media. They sound like hard-left ideologues to the point that what the media are today, I'm not talking about the new media or the alternative media, I'm talking about the old dinosaur media, the broadcast networks and the big newspapers. It's really very much like the media you have in China or in Russia, because in Russia, the big broadcast networks, they, and I point this out in How Evil Works, they know what they can say and what they can't say. Some of them are run by the Kremlin, and some are not. They're just run by editors who may as well be run by the Kremlin. They know what they can say. And the only place there's any actual criticism of the government is like on the Internet and maybe a few small newspapers. And so that's very much what we have in America now. We have a state, we have basically a propaganda ministry that masquerades as journalism. That's pretty much what you have in the mainstream press now.
Well, your books are merging in my head, but I think it was in The Marketing of Evil that you said that the head of a major newswire not only disallowed the term Islamic terrorist, but even the word terrorist was considered inappropriate. Talk to us about that. I don't understand why using the word terrorist would be inappropriate.
Yeah, I think that was the head of Reuters, the big national wire service, said that. And they were referring, believe it or not, to 9/11, which is probably, you know, the most obvious, unquestioned use of that word, you know, terrorism. You know, you fly jumbo jets into a building, you kill 3,000 innocent non-combatant people. I think most people in the world would say, yeah, that was a terrorist act. He said, can't remember his name, but the head of Reuters said, we're not going to use the word terrorist to describe that act because, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And that's basically how, that's adopting the Arab-Muslim talking point of saying, well, you know, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade or, you know, Hamas or Hezbollah that go and they blow up a pizza parlor in Israel and kill a bunch of kids in a weekend, that you, well, you know, we call this terrorism. But they say, no, these are occupiers. We don't make a distinction between combatant and non-combatant because they're all, because the non-combatants are supporting and funding the combatants. It's all part of the evil. And we need to fight this. And that's how they justify killing innocent people and thinking they're going to heaven and getting 72 virgins. If that isn't insane, insane has no meaning. You kill innocent people because God will love you for killing innocent people, and you go to heaven, he's going to give you endless sex. If that is not insane, there's no meaning to the word. But this is what Reuters did was to adopt that same insane logic. And what I'm saying is that they're telling all of their reporters, thousands of reporters, you can't use the word terror or terrorist to describe 9/11. But it goes more than that. You can't use the word Islamic to describe Islamic terrorism because they don't want to connect Islam in any way with all the terrorism. Let me tell you, there are people that have cataloged all of the terrorist acts in the world since 9/11, okay, just in the last 9 years. There are different compilings online. They range from anywhere from 9,000 to about 15,000 different terrorist acts all around the world. Almost all of them are committed by Muslims in the name of Allah, in the name of Islam, okay? And yet, when we're talking about terrorism, we're not allowed to mention Islam. And it's not enough to say, look, we're not condemning all Muslims, obviously. It's a small minority of Muslims that commit terrorist acts. We're not saying that all Muslims are evil. Of course not. But we're saying that within Islam, there is this belief that is growing and metastasizing that it's okay to kill people who don't agree with you and to spread your beliefs at the point of a sword throughout the world. This has been a mainstream belief for 14 centuries, and there's no sign that it's going away now. You're not allowed to say that. Okay? So, you know, there's this whole, this gets us into political correctness. They say, well, is this, you know, political correctness run amok? What are we really talking about when we say this? What we're really talking is mind control. When you're telling people what words they can use, you're telling them what thoughts they can think. And if you're not allowed to say, which really means not even think, that Islam has any connection to terrorism, you're really messing around with people's brains. You're taking things that are obvious, that literally a 5 or 6-year-old, if they had the facts, could see and come to an innocent, logical conclusion, and you're saying, you're not allowed to think that or say that. Okay? And this is, again, the kind of insanity we have among the elite class that is running our politics and our universities and our and academia and that hold themselves out as being, you know, superior to the rest of us to the point that they can tell us what we can, you know, what we can think and what we can say.
Now, you point out in your book that this all comes from America's need to embrace multiculturalism. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite chapters in The Marketing of Evil. It's called Multicultural Madness. You know, basically what I'm saying there is that, you know, if you don't, if, look, everything comes down to God. You know, if you're really looking at this issue, that what's really going on here? Why are these people doing this? Really, things come down to you are, you know, obedient to God and his laws, which in America we call Judeo-Christian values, or you're in rebellion against it in one of a million ways. And the thing is that, you know, what made America great, there's different things, okay? But really, we have these core values that were really the light, the shining light of the country, which we call Judeo-Christian values, which basically means, you know, biblical morality when it comes to sex, meaning it's just confined to marriage, and that makes marriage and family a strong unit, which is the basic unit of society. And I think everybody listening gets this, okay? And that the idea that the human life is sacred, because men and women are created in the image of God. And so somehow that means there's something sacred about human life. So you don't kill little babies before they're born, and you don't kill your parents when they get old and cantankerous and expensive to take care of. You just don't. There are certain basic beliefs like that that everybody believed without even having to talk about it. I'm talking like 60 years ago, World War II, Greatest Generation. We didn't have to be talking on the radio about it. Everybody who wasn't like really corrupted or out off the on the fringe of society, but the mainstream, believed all this, that there is a God and there's good and evil and we need to do right and embrace what's right and champion what's right, and that if we you know, side with evil, things go really, really badly and get really screwed up. Everybody knew this. Well, and that's what made America very strong and able to kick butt when it had to during wartime. And for all our problems, we had segregation, we had our problems and everything, but America was very unified and a strong country, morally and financially and militarily in every way. But then this whole idea of multiculturalism came in, and when you get right down to it, multiculturalism is not a celebration of other cultures. It's not about how, you know, what Eskimo music is like and why the Ubangis make their lips so big and why the Japanese worship sex organs and all. We don't really care about that. What it really is a backdoor way of denigrating and tearing down Western culture. Really, if you want to get very bottom line, it's a hatred of God. It's a hatred of Bible. It's a hatred of the Judeo-Christian, meaning Old Testament, New Testament, you know, the biblical values that really gave light and life to Western civilization for thousands of years and American civilization for hundreds of years. It was a hatred of all that. But you can't just say, hey, we hate God, we hate goodness, and we hate everything that's made America great, so will you listen to us and support us? Well, everybody would say, get out of here. So they have to dress it up. This is what the marketing of evil is all about. It's taking something that's really evil and self-destructive and bad and packaging it and perfuming it and gift-wrapping it so it looks like something good. That's what the book is all about. And so in the case of multiculturalism, it was taking stuff that was really bad that amounted to turning out the national light in America. Just turn. What happens when you turn the light out in the room and it's dark outside? You can't see anything. Everything looks alike. good stuff, bad stuff, everything, black, white, green, pink, everything looks the same in when the lights are out. Well, that's what multiculturalism is. So therefore, under multiculturalism, the greatest culture in the world, American culture, is equated to, you know, cultures where people eat each other, or cultures where people, you know, cut off kids' hands and feet for committing petty crimes, or stone women to death for walking down the street and holding hands with somebody that the father didn't approve of. I'm talking about in the Arab Muslim world, honor killings and so forth. And, you know, the most radical sexual anarchy is considered equal to normal, you know, monogamous, honorable relationship. And, you know, witchcraft and all kinds of weird paganistic religions and atheism are considered equal to the Judeo-Christian tradition that has really made been the light of the world. And all this, everything is equal. Again, it's not because we really like all these things. I even make a comparison with the radical animal rights movement, and I quote Ingrid Newkirk, the founder of the 600,000-member PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. She says, a rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. That's an actual quote from her. So she's saying that a rat and a little boy are the same thing. And I'm saying, it's not because Ingrid Newkirk and radical animal rights people really care about rats. I don't think they really like rats. Okay, it's because they want to throw out the idea that a human being, the little boy, okay, is somehow better than an animal. What does that mean? It means the little boy, a little girl has a soul. That means there is a God. And there being a God means that there is a, you know, that we are accountable to him in some way, that we are responsible for the way we live this life. Well, you know what, Mark? A lot of people don't want to go there. They don't want to go to the place that they don't like the idea that there is a God and that we are responsible and accountable to him. And there might be some consequence if we, you know, don't live in a proper way in accord with his laws. They don't like that. And so, therefore, all this garbage, the multiculturalism, the radical animal rights, all it is this infantile rebellion against God, but it's all dressed up in different ways. So they say, oh, well, yeah, I mean, we love animals. We don't want to see animals tortured, so I guess I'll donate to PETA. You know, well, we don't want to, like, you know, put down other cultures and so forth. Nobody's talking about that. But we have become foolish in our falling away from our core loyalty that we had for centuries to core Judeo-Christian values that keep us safe. And when we, having done that, we've created a vacuum, and into this vacuum has come all kinds of spiritual and philosophical and political garbage, which we've readily accepted because we lost our grounding. We lost our first love. We have forsaken our first love, which is God. And the price we pay is that we're, you know, we will fall for anything. And if you look at America right now and the confusion, the fact that 69 million people could vote for a person like Barack Obama, 53% of voters, okay? It shows that we are a profoundly conflicted and confused country. And, you know, I hopefully we're waking up now because it's so crazy, the Tea Party movement, a lot of people waking up. So there is hope. I know I sound very dire, but there really is hope. A lot of people are waking up. It takes a lot to stamp that DNA out of Americans. So hopefully we're coming back to life again.
Yeah, I think we are, and the Tea Party is sort of leading the way. But as your book predicted, anytime a group comes out and disagrees with all these progressive ideas, they're going to be portrayed as the villains of society. And of course, the Tea Party, according to progressives, is a very racist organization. It's an organization of people that, you know, carry guns with them wherever they go. I mean, you're seeing the Tea Party, you know, we all carry racist signs. It's amazing how the Tea Party is being portrayed by people who've never even attended a single Tea Party event.
Well, you know, Mark, if you or your listeners go to any communist website, I mean real hardcore card-carrying communist website, they're out there, okay, and read it for a little bit, you know what you're going to find? Racist, racist,
no.
Racist. America is racist. Capitalism is inherently exploitive and racist. You know, conservatives, Republicans are racist. That's all they've got. They have garbage. All they have, you know, Winston Churchill said socialism is, quote, the gospel of envy. Okay, all they have is envy and evil and corruption and completely irrational philosophies that violate all the laws of economics and common sense and the laws of God and man. They're garbage. They fail everywhere they're tried throughout the world and leave nothing but misery and suffering and death. They don't have anything to offer. So all they can do is call names. So they find the good people of the Tea Party. This is, you know, the Tea Party America is like a Norman Rockwell painting. You reach into that Norman Rockwell painting and you've got the grandmother that's picking up the litter after the demonstration and the soccer mom with her homemade signs. You can't get any more wholesome and sweet and good than this. These are just normal people that want to have a decent life for their kids and for their, you know, for their families. They don't want anything from government. They just want a chance. They want decency. And so look at that and call that racist, okay? This is a deeply diseased, evil, corrupt soul in the person calling it racist, because all they've got left is to call names. And that's why we have, you know, the ridiculous specter of during the Obama administration of the Department of Homeland Security, who should be chasing terrorists and protecting us, calling, you remember when they put out the report saying that people with the NRA bumper stickers and you know, supporters of Ron Paul and pro-lifers, uh-huh, and even returning war veterans. Excuse me? People that put their life on the line, put their butts on the line overseas to fight and get maimed and die to protect us, okay? Them coming home, that they are somehow, you know, Tim McVeigh wannabes and terrorists, and we need to watch out for them, okay? This is a disgraceful activity we see of our administration, and really, they're so desperate now that they've gone from blaming Fox News and blaming Republicans and blaming George W. Bush. Okay, now it's been, you know, that doesn't fly anymore because Bush has been out of office almost 2 years, and they control all branches of government, all three branches of government, okay? So it's ringing hollow to blame Bush. Now they've taken, after the blaming the Tea Party, and, you know, Breitbart says, I'll give you $100,000 if you give me one bit of evidence that there's any racism, they couldn't do it. So what do they do now? He's blaming his own people. He's blaming his ridiculous leftist base, saying, well, you need to get out there. You need to fight. You know, slavery didn't get, you know, get taken care of overnight. We need to get, I mean, it's pathetic. They're blaming Fox News. They're blaming normal people. They're blaming conservatives. They're blaming Tea Party America. They're blaming all the people in the Norman Rockwell painting, basically. They're blaming normal America. This is the first time I've ever seen this. I've been watching politics for 30, 40 years. I've never seen a president actually go out and blame normal America for being the problem. But, you know, you're talking about somebody who is profoundly in denial and a huge narcissist, unable to take criticism of any sort. So all they can do is flail and lash out at normality.
I don't think I recall George W. Bush once saying, you know, it's all these liberals on ABC, NBC, CBS that are making me look bad. Just he had too much class for that. But Obama seems to, you know, become extremely angry at the slightest criticism. He doesn't handle it very well relative to other presidents. I mean, Bill Clinton had more class than that. It's amazing that this guy feels like it's un-American to criticize a president.
I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever said this before in these words, but the president is mentally ill. I had a conversation with, this is not just my opinion, okay, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I had a conversation with a veteran forensic psychiatrist recently. This is a guy who's in his 70s. I'm not going to say his name, but he's written books. He's very well known. This is somebody who, you know, a forensic psychiatrist is somebody who makes his living as a expert witness in court cases, and his job is to evaluate the mental condition of people, okay? And he has been an expert witness in between 2,000 and 3,000 civil and criminal cases. So he's very good at sort of sizing up the mental state of people. I said, Barack Obama, does he have narcissistic personality disorder? And mind you, this is not saying, is he narcissistic? Everybody knows he's a narcissist, okay? Narcissistic personality disorder is a mental disorder. It's in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's got a very bad and severe list of a symptom picture. It's very much like being a sociopath or psychopath, although it's not exactly the same thing. But it's very similar. It's like, you do not want a person like that as president, okay? I asked him, without missing a beat, he said yes. Okay. In fact, he said it may even switch over into malignant narcissistic personality disorder That is a particularly bad variant where it steers into criminality, where you're constantly lying and going into criminal acts. And honestly, what this president has done and what his Congress under his watch has done is arguably criminal. I'm talking about not just, oh, it's unconstitutional. I mean statutorily criminal acts and the things they did to pass Obamacare, the bribing of Joe Sestak and all this. These are things that you could bring charges for and put people in prison for. And honestly, the Chicago politics, which is the background of where these people come from, you know, we say, oh, this is Chicago politics. This is politics as usual. Politics the Chicago way. Well, can we stop the euphemisms for 1 second? What are we actually talking about? We're talking about criminality. Criminality. It's actually against the law to do the things they do. Now, the fact that they don't get indicted and prosecuted and convicted and sentenced, that's something else, okay? But it actually is against the law to do the things they do. So, you know, I'm not some kind of like conspiracist radical here on the radio. Okay, I'm a mainstream, you know, journalist, author for the last 30 years. I'm just a normal guy, a father. I don't have any criminal record. I'm not wacko. I don't have delusions. I'm just not mincing words. I'm saying the same things that all these millions of Tea Partiers out there see and feel in their bones. There's something terribly, terribly wrong with the government right now and with the whole elite class that has given us this government. By that I include academia and the news media and so forth. And really, we don't need to be angry and upset and resentful. We do need to have a certain righteous indignation, which is not really the same as being, you know, spitting mad, like where you get so angry you can't even think straight. We don't need that. We need to think straight and clear and calmly. But we need to have the courage of our convictions that there's something terribly wrong. We need to stop listening to these people. And fortunately, I think we still have a free election system in this country. There is a lot of fraud that goes on, and there are a lot of people who, given the opportunity, absolutely, you know, commit vote fraud. But I think for the most part, we still can go in and vote and have those votes register in this country. And we really need to support candidates and vote like our lives depended on it on November 2nd, because our lives and our country do depend on it. And that will be the beginning. That will not be the end. That will just be the opening salvo. That's the first shot of taking America back. And then we've got to go and take back all these institutions that they've stolen from us while we were asleep, Mark.
Give us the how-to on that, because if you can say one thing about the marketers of evil, they're very patient. This started a long time ago. It was conducted in a very incremental fashion. What is the first step to taking back the schools, taking back the media, and getting this country back on the right course again?
Yeah, that's the right question. The thing is that we have to understand this has taken a long time. Our public education system, and what I'm going to say right now, is not a matter of opinion. There have been dozens of books written about this. This is simply a matter of history. Our public education system was taken over by atheistic progressives more than 100 years ago. This was in the latter part of the 1800s, before even the 20th century. This is, and I write about it in the education chapter in The Marketing of Evil. And these are not people that are trying to destroy America and that hate, you know, that hate children. They just have a profoundly different worldview than everybody listening to your show right now and you and me. They don't believe in God, and therefore they believe other things that are profoundly, that really don't work, because the truth is there is a God and there are laws that we need to follow or things go really bad. They're in rebellion against that inside themselves, and so they're able to sleep at night because they think they're doing something good. Anyway, our school system was taken over by people like this many decades ago. It's going to take a while to take it back. There are individual solutions people can do. My wife and I homeschooled our two children. Their souls and minds are intact today. One's 19, is an Eagle Scout, and he's a good kid. And the other one is 21, and she's got a good head on her shoulders. She's not tattooed. Both of them are virgins. Both of them are straight up people. This is not too hard to do. You have to have a little bit of commitment, but you can go and you can have an individual solution to homeschool your kids, or find a private school that won't corrupt them and destroy them. But on a larger picture, we have to have vouchers. I'm just dealing with the school issue. If you have vouchers, then people are not conned into saying, look, I'm paying this huge property taxes for this local school system, I guess I may as well use it. If they had a voucher, they could go and find a private school and use that. That was something more in line with their personal, moral, and religious values. So there are ways to do it. With the entertainment media, we all know how horrible that is. But you know what? You do have the movies like the Bella and the Junos and the Passion of the Christ and certain things that get through there, the Narnia Chronicles, that really are because these people in Hollywood, even the secular elite, they say, hey, you know, these kind of Christian metaphors like the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe makes us tens of millions of dollars. When we put out leftist garbage, nobody goes to it to see it. Things that are, you know, denigrating our soldiers and stuff like that, like Rendition, and they flop at the box office. So, you know, we need to support movies that are of sound values, and don't go to the ones, and don't rent the ones that aren't. And we need to support filmmakers that actually go and do it. And honestly, one of the best things is, I am How Evil Works talking about the news media, because that's my field. With the technology we have today, the technology of the Internet, which is just as revolutionary as the Gutenberg printing press was in its day 500 years ago, you know, you can have WorldNet Daily, which is a relatively small organization that has a huge readership and influence, okay? Or Matt Drudge, who's one guy. One guy has more readership than Newsweek with its hundreds of employees, okay? With the technology you've got, and not just internet, but, you know, satellite technology and radio and what we're doing right now, you have a new media or alternative media, or some people call it conservative media, that is really flowering right now. And God bless it, and continue to bless it, because you know what? You cannot have a free country without a free press. And we have not had a free press for a long time. We've been like the Soviet Union, just believing and hearing and being confused by, you know, what we hear. And even if we know it's lies, we kind of feel alone and like maybe we're crazy. And that's what's nice about the Tea Party, is they get together and say, hey, here's millions of people just like me. I'm not crazy. Those people over there in Washington, they're the crazy people. That's good in itself. But in terms of your question, taking back institutions, it's happening. It's happening right now in terms of the media, because the traditional media are dying. That's not my opinion. Their readership is going down. They are going bankrupt. They're going out of business. They're consolidating. Their advertising is going way down. In every concrete measure, they are dying, and they need to continue to die, because what they're doing is poisoning people and spreading lies. They are spreading the lies that the Tea Partiers are racist and that what Obama is doing is good. This is very bad. This is the marketing of evil. They're marketing evil and making it look good. You know, evil needs to die, okay? And what's good needs to flower and grow. And that's why I ended How Evil Works talking about the new media, okay? Because it's the single most hopeful thing that I see, because it really is kicking butt right now in the media world. And, of course, they hate it. That's why Obama is always, you know, railing against Fox News. This is still a tiny minority. All the other cable networks, all the broadcast networks, all the newspapers, they're all in Obama's camp. But one network comes out, cable network, and is telling something of the truth. Okay, they're not perfect, but it's very refreshing to have Fox News. And they can't stand it, because the darkness can't stand the light. And that's we need to champion the light in this country. So it's going to take a long time, but we need to take our sanity, our government back, our kids back, and then we need to like get about the business of realizing what's happened to us. Then we need to take back all these institutions one by one.
I sent my son to a private school from kindergarten through 12th grade. He's now at a major university with a 4.0 average. Like your children, he has no tattoos, he has no body piercings. And I have to tell you, we were in a shopping mall. He must have been six, maybe 5 years old, David, and this kid walked by coming out of one of the goth shops and had the dark black dyed hair and the multiple facial piercings and the tattoos all over him. My son looked back at me and said, "Yuck, Daddy." That's yucky. And, you know, but I that was one of the first little feedbacks I got that made me think that maybe I was doing a good job. You know, I had never pointed out a tattooed person or a pierced person to him and said, "That's yucky." But that was his own opinion upon looking at them. And
yeah, that's
another great.
You preserve their innocence. They know. They
absolutely.
We don't like screw them up. They have their own God-given conscience. They know what's yucky and what's not.
It's just, oh yeah, it's so neat. And I'll share one more story with you. When he was about 4 years old, we were, again, this happened at the mall. We were walking into the mall and he looked down and saw a dime on the ground. He goes, "Look, Daddy, money." And he picked it up. And I sort of jokingly said, "Chris, what are you going to do with all that money?" And he said, "I know. Let's give it to some poor kids that don't have any." And isn't it? And we walked into the store. It was called Service Merchandise. And we walked into the store, and almost if God had put it there, there was one of those donate to Jerry's kids things.
Buckets
there. And I said, "Well, there's an opportunity right there." And, you know, I picked him up and held him up, and he dropped his money in the bucket. And it was just such a good feeling. And, you know, if you leave kids alone and you don't influence them with all this nonsense that we say, you know, daddy's roommate and Heather has two mommies, or, you know, whatever the stuff is they're trying to push in some of the public schools, and you just leave them alone, they'll grow up right. I mean, these kids, I mean, they have to have positive influence. But when children are born, they're very, very good individuals. And it takes this marketing of evil to turn people the wrong way. A really great story that I saw was they did this study where they let toddlers, actually less than toddlers, these kids are still crawling around, into a room full of food. And there were desserts and meats and chicken and, you know, every kind of food available. And every kid had a researcher assigned to them. And they recorded every single thing the kid ate. And how much that, you know, how much of it they ate. And most people thought they were going to go straight for the sugary stuff and the desserts. But no, the kids on their own with no prompting from adults actually ate a very balanced, healthy meal. And it, you know, it takes all those commercials on TV encouraging them to eat the sugary products to turn people that way. So it just seems like there are all these forces out there that on a daily basis try to get us to do the wrong thing.
The thing is that, Mark, that people don't realize is when you have your five-year-old in the kindergarten class and you allow them to come in and teach, and let's say they show these kids a picture of two men kissing, and because they're trying to do this, you know, that you know, Heather has, well, two daddies, two mommies, that gay marriage is okay and that this is normal. And in their minds, they think that they're just, like, trying to, like, stop people from being biased and abusive. But what they're really doing, when they violate children and they show them men kissing and being married and saying it's perfectly normal and you can have two daddies, they are profoundly confusing that child, because that child, excuse me, there is a God and he has his own conscience. He's not just a blank slate. He sees good and evil for his own. It's not just that you put your values in it. And so he sees there's something wrong with it. He sees it's yuck, Daddy. But you go and you say, no, it's not yuck. There's something wrong with the thing in you that says yuck. Okay, there's something wrong. You're getting that kid to doubt God. You're profoundly screwing with his brain. You're confusing him. And what I'm saying is that he will be confused for the rest of his life, and not just about gay marriage, but about everything, because you're teaching that kid not to believe his own conscience and his own common sense and to believe your corrupt worldview instead. And that is child abuse. That is a severe, that is worse than smacking this kid, because he can get over the smack. But if you mess with his brain, you've left your imprint on his brain. And that's why it is so dangerous to allow these change agents to go and to mess around with your children, with their brains, because there's something sacred. You have to preserve their brains.
even with our local school system, David, I have seen things that are completely bizarre. It's one of the reasons I sent my son to private school. But there was an instance in this community where a young girl was raped by two fellow male students. And they got no prison time. They were underage. I think they ended up just getting probation. And believe it or not, at some point in the future, this girl ended up having to ride the same school bus as the two boys who raped her. Now, you would think that having been convicted of what they did, that they would sit in the back of the bus and put their heads down. No. They would verbally attack her on the bus with things, with sayings like, you know you liked it, you know you had a good time. Well, the mother then approached the school system and said, these same two boys who raped my daughter are harassing her on the bus. You've got to get these two boys off the bus. They refused to do it, and the school system actually sided, I mean, the courts actually sided with the school system. I mean, some of the stuff that goes on out there between the liberal school system and the liberal courts is just amazing. And in fact, at one point, the mother stood and met the bus and threatened the two boys not to harass her daughter. And the two boys threatened legal action against her for harassing them. I mean,
yeah.
It's just absolutely amazing the stuff that goes on out there.
The public school system has just gone insane today. I mean, I'm choosing my words clinically. I'm not just, you know, casting aspersions. There's like, just for instance, the zero tolerance policy, okay? I'm in the news business, okay? We get these horror stories every week of a kid who is expelled from school for having a G.I. Joe, you know, a rifle in his backpack. It's 1 inch long. It's a piece of molded plastic. It's just a little tiny little booger of plastic, but it's in the shape of a rifle. And they say, well, our regulations say weapons, and we call this a weapon. Okay, we have kids being thrown out of school because they had a nail clipper or aspirin, or I mean, we even have stories where there was a girl that was suicidal and she brought a knife to school. Another boy who knew that she had mental problems took the knife away from her and put it in his locker to save her life. He was expelled from school for 4 months because of zero tolerance policy on having weapons. Tell me this is not insanity, okay? This is, you know, these things come for review. They say, wait a minute, you don't mean this. We understand the reason for the law, can't have kids with guns and knives, but this, okay, it's not like, you know, that nobody went and talked to the principal, talked to the board of education, whatever, and said, you can't mean this. Yes, we do mean this. It comes up for review, and the kid is still expelled for 4 months. And I have probably a dozen examples of this just in the marketing of evil in the education chapter just to show. And this is way beyond the crazy curriculum stuff and the left-wing viewpoint. This is just like one aspect to show that normal common sense is completely absent from public school. I mean, people have to let this register, just to penetrate their brain, to realize this is not one or two isolated instances. This is your school. This has been going on for years. I wrote The Marketing of Evil 5 years ago. Okay, those are examples there. We still see it every week of schools, public schools in the United States of America doing this insane stuff. And they guess, well, you can't mean that. Because this was a noble thing my child did. My kid's, he's an Eagle Scout, and he had a shotgun round that was in the trunk of his car because he and his dad went duck hunting last weekend. You can't mean to expel him from school for that. Yes, we do. Zero tolerance. It's happening all the time. So I'm saying is that this is a madhouse. We're talking about a madhouse, and people need to take responsibility. They do not need to be angry and upset and screaming and out of control. They just need to quietly realize this is madness. These are my children God gave me, okay? I'm responsible for them. not this crazy person that's teaching in the school. And by the way, there are good people that are teaching in the school.
Of course.
There are, just as there are good people in the mainstream media. There's good people everywhere because they figure this is where the action is. Somebody needs to be here who's sane for these children. So I'm not implying by any stretch that all teachers and all administrators are bad. There are some saints in there, and God bless them. But I'm saying you can't put your kid in there saying, well, maybe he'll find a saint that'll be an oasis in this desert of madness. Okay, you need to be you need to be responsible for your kids. So I'm not a very good walking billboard for public education. I think it's mostly bad, and people need to be very aware of what's going on there, and they need to choose wisely in how they educate their kids.
Well, as someone who experienced both private education and public, I can tell you that the 4 years I spent in public school, it's amazing I didn't end up needing therapy. I had gone to a nice, quiet little Catholic school from kindergarten through eighth, but that's as high as the local Catholic school went. So my last 4 years, I attended a public high school, and I can tell you in that time, I saw things you wouldn't believe. I had knives pulled on me twice. At lunchtime, we had principals with walkie-talkies circulating all over the school. And, of course, that was, 30 years ago. So what we have now are armed police officers circulating around the school and metal detectors and all those kinds of things. But as someone who experienced both the private and the public school world, I don't care whom I might offend. It is a night and day difference, just like it is with homeschooling. I had a brother who, when he got out of college, substitute taught in public schools for a few months, and at one point he felt like, I'm risking my life going into this jungle every day. I'm not going to do this anymore. So, again, there certainly are good teachers, good principals, good school board members, and decent kids in the school, but one way to keep your kids away from the madness is to keep them away from the public schools. I'm sorry, I say that with no concern about offending anyone.
Yeah, and your experience is 30 years old. It's worse now.
I have, as I said, my brother was there, and he was teaching a class, and one kid stood up, pointed to one of the more attractive girls in the room and said, Mr. G, would you like to blank her? And used a four-letter word for fornicate.
Right.
I could not imagine from the time period I was in school that a student would be so bold as to stand up and ask a substitute teacher if they would like to have sex with one of the girls in the room. It's amazing what went on. He said one time a couple of thugs were talking loudly outside his class, and he went outside and said, hey, listen, you guys are going to have to take the conversation somewhere else. The bell rang. You should be in class. Both boys shot him the finger, and, in my time, if somebody would have dared to shoot a teacher the finger, which they wouldn't have done, they would have, at that point, tried to break the 100-meter time record to get away. These guys strolled off at a leisurely pace, not the least bit concerned about what they had just done. So it's just, I had a teacher ask me to teach a class on marketing. This goes back about 20 years in a public school classroom. So I agreed to, along with a coworker, to do it. And I'm not kidding you, David. One young man actually tried to rip the blouse off the young lady who was sitting in front of him. While we were sitting there,
you know what the solution for this is? You remember Joe Clark in New Jersey? This is a real life story. They made a movie. I think it was called Stand By Me. True story. He was a black school principal in a very, very drug infested, full of gang members and drug dealers high school, and he walked the hallways with a baseball bat. And I remember in that movie there was one line where he says, "Hey, they call me Crazy Joe. Now they can call me Batman." And he basically threw the drug dealers out. He threw hundreds of people out of the school. He said, "You're out. You're not coming back. You're expelled forever. Goodbye. Good riddance." He just threw them out. And he had all kinds of flack from the school board and from everybody. Oh, these kids, he said, they're out of here. Okay. And the kids in that school, the good kids, they loved him. They rallied behind him. They got good marks in school because they were able to focus in class and so forth. He just basically, if you were rotten, you were out. And he did. And this is a true story. And it just shows what one person can do. He had conviction. He had not only the drug dealers against him. he had a lot of the even the faculty and the intelligentsia of the school, because they don't want to rock the boat, all against him. He fought them all, and he saved that school. And it shows that one person who's right thinking and has courage can make a difference.
David, I want to ask you one more question before I let you go. I was extremely impressed by your description of the misinterpretation of the First Amendment and how for 150 years it was applied correctly, and now it is not. When you see all the things that have come about due to the separation of church and state, not being able to say under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, not being able to have a nativity scene on the courthouse lawn, what are your thoughts as you review the First Amendment and look at the interpretation as it stood for 150 years?
Well, of course, the word separation of church and state does not occur anywhere in the Constitution. That's a surprise to many people because they're so used to hearing about the constitutional separation of church and state. The constitutional separation of church and state. Oh, today the ACLU filed citing the constitutional separation of church and state. It doesn't exist. It's a complete and total fabrication. The First Amendment has 16 words that say, can I quote it? It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That's it. There's nothing else about religion, period, in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. That's it. And somehow that became the separation of church and state, meaning that kids can't say Merry Christmas to each other in school. We just had a story a day or two ago in World Net Daily that it's illegal to sing Silent Night in school. Okay? I don't know what school district this was in, but in the United States of America, in a public school, that they won't allow kids to sing, coming up in the Christmas season, they won't be allowed to sing Silent Night. One of the classic Christmas carols of the ages, okay? Can't sing Silent Night because of the separation of church and state. But the fact is, for the first 150 years after the Constitution, America was a Christian country. Back at the time this was passed, we were appropriating money to buy Bibles during the Revolutionary War. We bought them from other European countries because we were having a problem with Britain at the time because we were at war with them. We couldn't buy Bibles from them. So we bought them from Holland and other places so we could pass them out in this country, this Congress. We were doing all kinds of things. America was Christian from top to bottom. And the idea that for 150 years, somehow all the Supreme Courts didn't realize that it really meant that we couldn't say Merry Christmas in a public school, that, you know, this is a total fabrication of our modern age, where we had some bad Supreme Court justices that manufactured out of whole cloth, they just manufactured an idea that we have to, I think it was Thurgood Marshall that said that we have this a wall of separation between church and state, and we couldn't tolerate any breach of that wall. And ever since then, you know, in the 60s, they took prayer out of the public school, and now we've had it failed, but we had that idiot atheist Michael Newdow. He sued World Net Daily for $1 million. We beat him on that. He tried to take In God We Trust out of the Pledge of Allegiance, Under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. He'd like to take In God We Trust off the currency, he said, but he's been losing all his cases, so we're probably okay there. But we have this pathological aversion to God. And to, you know, we had Judge Roy Moore. He was the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. He had the Ten Commandments in the, you know, in the front room of the Alabama Judicial Building. Well, some local idiot judge says you can't have that there. And it gets taken out, and he gets taken out of the Alabama Supreme Court because he's violating some lower court judge who said, no, you know, you can't have this representation of the Ten Commandments. Excuse me? Go back to the Constitution. It says, Congress shall make no law. Listen, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion nor prohibiting the freedom of the free exercise thereof. Okay, Congress shall make no law. How does having a statue of the Ten Commandments in a courthouse, when, I have to tell you, the Ten Commandments are inscribed all over the Supreme Court building. There's all kinds of, you know, friezes and all kinds of you know, decorative artwork there where you have Moses and the Ten Commandments everywhere. So how does that amount to Congress making a law? It doesn't. It's just a secularist fantasy of people that don't like God and don't want to have the, you know, the foundational, you know, the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount, the stuff that made America great. They want it to go away, and so they make up a whole new principle of law, that separation of church and state. It's not in the Constitution. We just made it up. But we repeat it over and over again. This is the famous marketing dictum. You repeat it over and over again, and pretty soon, you know, eventually people will believe it. That's what's happened, basically, in a nutshell, with the First Amendment.
I mean, didn't half the colonies actually have a state religion at the time that was passed?
7 of the original 13 colonies had official state establishments of religion. Official state religions. That's right. This is very contrary to, you know, where we think today, okay, because we don't want a theocracy. We don't want to have an official religion. And I'm glad you said that, because that was actually the meaning of Congress shall pass no law respecting an establishment of religion. What they actually wanted, and this is not my opinion, you can read any of the contemporary writings around the time. You can actually read the debate. I actually quote the debate in this chapter in The Marketing of Evil, where I show back and forth, and then this guy said, and then this guy countered and said this. I actually show the debate, which was recorded, of the Founding Fathers when they were debating the wording of the First Amendment. What they were trying to do was nothing more nor less than to stop the official establishment of a national religion. They didn't want the national government to say, the official religion of America will be, you know, a Presbyterian, and therefore all you Methodists and all you Baptists so forth are going to have to give up your religion and become Presbyterians. They didn't want that. And that's what the meaning of the First Amendment was. It wasn't that kids cannot pass out candy canes and cannot say Merry Christmas to each other in public school or sing Silent Night. We have a horrible perversion of a wonderful document in the Bill of Rights and the Ten Commandments in modern judicial theory. And, you know, it's we really need to stand up, challenge these things, sue these things, impeach judges that pass these types of things. We have to have a bucket of guts and start. First, we have to elect these socialists out of office in November 2nd. And then we have to roll up our sleeves and realize we cannot have insane people as judges. It's not good. If you have a judicial problem that goes before a judge, you can't have like a madman be the judge. You have to have a person who is of sound mind and is loyal to the founding principles of this country and loyal to its laws, and not somebody who is a secret revolutionary who wants to turn America and its laws on its head while pretending to abide by the Constitution and laws, but meanwhile is legislating from the bench. We can't tolerate that anymore. We have to impeach those people. We have to throw them out. And you know what? You throw a few of them out, guess what? You will see a change in the kind of lawmaking and the kind of judicial opinions, because they'll realize that they're not invulnerable and in there for life. Because judges are not elected for the most part. They're in there for life. And we need to remove this immunity. They need to be accountable to the public, just like congressmen and other elected officials are.
David, I couldn't agree with you more. And hopefully it gives you hope. And I'm sure you've been to some tea parties yourself. As you go to tea parties and talk with people, it's hard to encounter a bigger group of people that either have read or are actively reading the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers. As much as they like to portray us as a large group of ignorant racists, these are the people who get it. These are the people who understand what the First Amendment was all about, what the Declaration of Independence was all about. There are people out there who get it, and I would say to all of you, for further enlightenment, pick up not one but both of David's books, The Marketing of Evil, How Evil Works. We're going to get those links up on our website real soon today. And, David, it's just been an absolute pleasure having you here today. We've gone a little over on time, but we've certainly enjoyed the conversation, and hope we can have you back again sometime.
I'd be happy to, Mark.
Fantastic. You have a great rest of the weekend, and we look forward to having you back soon.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.